Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The best things happen after dark. Nightclubs are the ultimate space for self-expression, escape, music, socializing, and forgetting for a moment the outside world. They're a place to discover ourselves, find new friends, and fall in love. As humans, we like to dance to a beat, and there's nothing like a good night out. I'm Jody Harsh. I'm a DJ, producer, and occasional club promoter. I know how to tear up a dance floor, and for this podcast, I want to explore with my guests how club culture and going out has shaped their identities and informed their work. I've got us the guest list and queue jump sorted, so we'll delve right into the hazy memory banks and hit the floor. This is Life of the Party. My guest this week is a bona fide dance floor icon. She was one half of Moloco, whose track Sing It Back is an anthem known across the world, and throughout her 25-year career has released some of my favourite dance music. Her album Overpowered is electro-pop heaven. It's my coming-of-age soundtrack, and her recent bangers like Simulation and Narcissus are twisted disco delights. Her live shows are the stuff of legend. She makes music you can rave to, so much so she's even played the Berghain. But it's music with meaning and emotion. Her journey through culture is an unconventional path. Her position as an odd one out in the music industry has made her an icon for so many people who feel they don't fit into the norm. I think I can already tell that late nights on dance floors have informed her work and are a huge part of her story. This incredible artist stands out in a room, and I'm so excited to have her on this episode. Roisin Murphy, this is your life of the party.
Hello.
What an intro.
Was that all right?
It was lovely.
Where are you?
I am in Ibiza, obviously.
That's so nice.
Oh, mate, it's brilliant.
Are you getting to party a little bit over there, or is it just chills?
No, it's mostly just chills and, yeah, loads of friends here. I came on my own.
Right.
My fella has a house here, so I stayed here on my own for a week first in the house, which was amazing after being kind of all locked up together during lockdown. So real nice to sort of spend some time with myself, finding myself.
Finding yourself in Ibiza, perfect.
And now we're going to have a house full for a couple of weeks. So 3 weeks in total.
So let's start from the very beginning, your first ever party back in Ireland. Do you remember like a birthday party growing up?
I don't think I could possibly remember the first party I was at because they had so many parties. And I often say, no matter how rock and roll I become, I could never be as rock and roll as me parents and their generation. They were just, I lived in a town called Arklow, I was brought up, and they had a lot of employment. It was like really one of the most well off, well, not well to do, but people were really doing well in Arklow in the 70s. And they had a thing called the 4-day weekend. You know, people would just get on it on Friday, not going to work until Tuesday and stuff like that. My uncle was a jazz musician and had these big, long jazz sessions on Sundays every summer, like every Sunday. So that I can remember really clearly, being there from the age of like 4 and 5, dancing away to jazz all day and just being surrounded by absolute lunatics, adults that are very childlike. And my mum has shown me very many things, but one of the great things that I know from my mother is how to throw people out.
Right.
Because she's extremely good at that. She's had to do it very, very often. So I always turn into my mom when I have to do something like that. So, you may go on about your business now. You know where that door is. You know, if you know homes to go to, things like that. So.
That's the technique. Just rudeness.
Yeah, just also very mumsy. Go very mumsy about it, and people kind of take their tail in and head out. You know.
Got it.
And but they all sang as well. Everybody sang songs constantly. It was like living in a sort of MGM musical, really. Right. Everybody was bursting out into song constantly. Oh, summer for sure was a party. And then we had wonderful Christmases and, yeah, I mean, any excuse, really, for a few drinks and a knees up.
And then you later moved to the north of England. So where did you start your dance floor journey there, in nightclubs?
In Manchester, yeah.
I'm guessing the Hacienda may have played?
Yeah, I was in the Hacienda a few times, but it wasn't my favourite, the Hacienda. I like smaller clubs, you know, where you go in and you're enveloped by sound. I love wooden dance floors and things like that. Old school clubs, the kind of clubs they don't build anymore, which is really sad.
Totally.
You know, when you go in and there's no windows and there's no sense of the outside world, it's just dark and disco lights and softness and, you know, warmth, really. So I did go to I tried to get in very early on into the Hacienda, oftentimes would be turned down, but I did get in a few times, yeah, before I left for Sheffield.
Was it a really strict door then?
There was a woman on the door. You could get past the fellas, but if the woman was on the door, you were in severe trouble. Like, she would pull you in and ask you all these questions and then figure out that you were 14 and then kick you in the arse and you'd be around.
So it was an age thing. It was because you didn't have the right
idea. Absolutely,
There
was a lot of young kids trying to get in all the time, and they had a very dodgy situation, the Hacienda, I think, with their license was always on the edge of being taken away from them, type thing. So they did have to be careful, but I got in a few times. I didn't love the Hacienda because it just didn't sound great. It looked great, but the music didn't really envelop you, you know. So there was like little clubs that I went to, and I went all over the city very young age. What happened to me was we moved when I was 12 as a family, and my parents broke up when I was 15 in a very bad way. And they all sort of dissipated, and I didn't want to go with my mother back to Ireland. So I stayed in Manchester at that point. And when I was 16, I got a flat of my own. And so I was totally free as a bird to go wherever I wanted to go. And it's a miracle. Like, nothing bad ever happened to me, but I was in really rough places very young, you know. And every kind of music was available to me to experience in Manchester. A lot of live music. And that really was where I started going out, was going to gigs. Because you didn't get asked your age and for, you know, you weren't interrogated at the door. You just went in. And then, in the late 80s, you know, I started going to clubs. First clubs I went to were more like black clubs, really R&B, soul, rare groove, like jazz dance places. And then I went to hip hop nights, and I went to blueses, you know, reggae blueses. And then gradually the sort of acid house thing came in, and I went, there was a really good acid house club there. I can't remember the name of it. That I loved, and then we started getting into, I went to raves a few times, but didn't love raves. Again, don't like big, massive concrete spaces for dancing in, you know. Really love clubs.
Yeah. Would you go to gay clubs?
Yeah. I went to Trade when I was 16. I went down to I went down to London. And that was another one where we had to queue three or four times, me and this little girl that tried to get in. We kept getting turned down, and then on the fourth queue, we got in. And
so
I remember
was
Terminals. Yeah, and
yeah,
it was,
so it was Terminals at very late night, right? Through Sunday,
all the way. We stayed there until the morning. Yeah, and
nice.
I remember coming in there and going up onto the balcony and looking down and seeing all these men in their Calvin Klein underpants, you know, and the lasers all pinging around them like a sea of men. And I said to me friend, I said, I love this. It's like Babylon, you know. And we had a brilliant night, but a real eye opener. Oh my god, yeah. And then
absolutely.
And then the other gay club that I really remember is Paradise, which was in the in Manchester as well, in the building that used to be Factory Records offices. Beautiful, like loft space. And we used to come over from Sheffield for that. So that was a bit later. That wasn't actually on when I lived in Manchester, but we used to come over special. And my friend, actually, who's with me now, we used to go there quite a lot. And we'd have to, like, get off with each other to get in, because that was at the door policy there. You had to be gay.
Right.
So we kind of hold our noses like that. Try and prove that we were gay.
I heard a story. I don't know if you can clear up this rumor, but I heard a story that you were dancing on the bar at a gay club in Manchester, which then became the inspiration for Kylie's Spinning Around.
She's video. Here.
Is that true?
Dawn's the director. Come here, Dawn. We're asking about me getting on the bar and the inspiration for Kylie getting knocked up on the bar.
Can you tell us that story?
Well, it was Manumission, was it? It was a really early Manumission party. I thought it was one of the electric chairs, but it wasn't. It was a Manumission do.
This one's always been my inspiration.
Dawes Shadforth, big director now. I was there and I got up on the bar and I was riding the bar like a horse, and then all these guys who were in like a Chippendale type troupe came around me, and they were like, I had white PVC boots on, a little white mini dress, and they were just kind of kissing me boots, and I was legs akimbo all on the bar and everything, and it was just one of many ridiculous
sounds
stories.
Sounds like a nice night out.
Somebody's got a VHS of it somewhere, because I remember there was someone over in the corner videoing it.
So that then became that then became Kylie's Spinning Around video.
I think she just thought, Dawn must have just thought, I'll clock that and thought, yeah, you're hopping up on the bar is not a bad idea. But I wasn't wearing gold. I had definitely not responsible for the gold hot pants, which really carried the whole video.
Right.
But she had the whole place adoring her as she was like writhing around on top of the bar.
It was a good night. It's a good old night.
Beautiful man.
Not the worst I've got up to in nightclubs, honestly.
No. Sounds fun. So you're in Ibiza now.
Yeah.
So I guess when Sing It Back came out, when you were part of Moloko, it was sort of that peak commercial Ibiza era.
Yes.
Did you get to spend much time
there
then?
Were you there
performing and stuff?
Yeah, I was there standing beside Pete Tong going, play my fucking record. Play it now. He always tells that story.
Before it was a hit.
No, I think it was after Sing It Back. That was a familiar feeling. But yeah, at that moment, like where it was all down at Café Del Mar, that was actually. Play my fucking record. But yeah, that's never been my experience of Ibiza anyway, really. You can have that, but you can have all kinds of experiences here. And there's something about it just keeps drawing the like of me and you back, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about that record because, I mean, I know so many people who say it's one of their favourite dance records. I'm sure you hear that all the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when I DJ, I always play the Moose Tea remix, which
because
is sort of that Donna Summer bass line.
Because
it's major. It's so good.
It's like you play it and you can't put anything next to it. The sound of it is so pristine.
Yeah. Can we talk about the inspiration for that track? Because I think you've said before it was inspired by a night out of Body and Soul.
Is that right? Well, I tell you, the song first was on the second album, Moloko's second album. And when we made the first album, and as I said to you, I was really into dance music as a teenager and that. But when we made the first album, I think both of us were a little bit turned against it. It had been around for about 5 or 6 years and it was getting more and more commercial. And Moloko was really a reaction to it, you know. Big part of Moloko was what we weren't going to do. And we weren't going to do that. So that's not on the first album in any way, shape or form.
Mm.
And I think also for Mark, because he had had some dance hits and stuff, and so had his mates. You know, they were really on the very vanguard of it in the UK, in Sheffield there. And it didn't matter what they did with it. It was still always seen as a kind of novelty music at that time.
Right.
You can't put yourself back in that place. But really, it was like if you had a hit, it was like a novelty thing, you know, even when you were serious about it. So that it didn't wasn't leading these artists into a place where they had a safety of being album artists or, you know, doing live music or anything like that. It seemed to be stuck there. So for him, I think it was good that I was very reactionary about it, and he went with that because he'd had those sorts of issues. But I went to New York after making the first album and after the touring and all that. On my own, as is me want now and again, such as now, you know, to go and find yourself type thing.
Yeah.
And I went and I stayed with a girl I didn't know, but it was a friend of a friend. And she turned out to be one of my best, all-time best friends. And she was working in dance music at the time. She was working for a label called Groove, but she had worked for Strictly and Tommy Boy and all sorts. So she knew every party that was going on in the town at the time. And brought me all over, and I got a massive education about where it all came from, and that it wasn't sort of some alien music or from only from Germany, or, you know, it. I got to understand where the musical roots of it were, and a big part of that was going to Body and Soul. And hearing Francois DJing, he'd be DJing. Now, Body and Soul, like, was on the in the day on a Sunday, every Sunday at that time, and I used to go even on my own there, like, just that's the only club I've ever been to consistently on my own, just to have a dance.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. It's so good.
So you just go by yourself and just get lost in the music.
Yeah, just, it was all about dancing. You know, it wasn't about drinking. It wasn't about being out of control. Yeah. It was about being part of, really being led by the DJs without standing around looking at them or videoing them like we do now, you know, but really being led by these DJs who've come, you know, from Paradise Garage, like from the very inception of what it is that we do. And then these dancers too, they were all there. They were, half of them had been in Paradise Garage too, and the Loft. And so this whole new way of dancing that I saw as well, that was like balletic and moving your feet and stuff like that, because at that time there wasn't even any footwork in the dancing in the UK. It was all like this, you know.
Yeah.
And so I saw this sort of like full body movement to house music, which also made many, many connections for me, and I got enlivened again by house music there. And also Francois would play these big vocal tracks, and he'd turn it down and everyone would know every word. And that was where I got the idea of sing it back to me, you know, that would be a great thing for a house record. So I came back and I said to Mark, give me a house beat. And that was the first song I wrote for that second album. And then I listened to that second album the other day, and it's a bit embarrassingly paranoid, that album. It's super paranoid.
Really? In what way?
Like, Sing It Back's the only nice one on there. And maybe Caught in a Whisper, I think that's on there. That's nice too. But the rest of them are all like, you're talking about me. And I realised that was when we started smoking skunk in the UK. It was like, enter skunk. So, I'm not a doctor, super paranoid. And also, I think it was paranoid as well because of trip hop, because of the label trip hop. And we put out the first record before trip hop was even named. But pretty soon after it came out, this label was shoved on us and shoved on loads of other people that we didn't really feel we had anything in common with and all that. So that caused paranoia in and of the writing of the record. And I think there was paranoia about, because Sing It Back was originally on this house beat. I think he got paranoid about doing house then at the last minute, and he changed it to something very beautiful, but it's not dance floor, you know? the version on the
disco-y
album.
Disco-y, Balearic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, of course. Yeah.
But also.
Because it was the remix.
Boris DeLuge did a remix of it. But basically, we put out this Paranoid album and it was a bit of a damp squid commercially. And at the end of it, I went to the label and I was like, look, I always meant to do this as a dance record, and should we get some remixes? And they got Todd Terry to do one, because he was just had a massive hit with Everything But the Girl remix, Missing. And that cost the price of a small house in Sheffield, that remix. We could have bought a house in Sheffield. Not a nice house, but, you know, still a house, could have rented it to students. We'd still be making money today. But anyway. Anyway, and it wasn't, you know, I love Todd, he's genius, but it wasn't one of his best, really, honestly. And then, so that was a bit disappointing. And then Boris DeLugosh did the remix off of his own back. He got in contact with the label in Germany. He was, please give me the parts. And it came to me in those days on, you know, you got sent in the post a CD. And I put it on and I was like, literally, like it was like Star Wars, you know, when Leia is projected as a, I could see myself on Top of the Pops immediately. It was a visual, that's a hit.
Right.
It was written all over the bloody thing. But the label didn't believe it. The label just thought, no, we've spent the price of a small house on Todd Terry. It's got to be Todd Terry. And that was a big drama. I was like lying on the floor crying in the label going, please, like stamping my feet, stamping my hands on the ground, tears coming out of my eyes. Yeah. Please put out the Boris DeLugosh version as the A side.
Yeah.
No. So anyway, they put it out. And the first week it came out, it went into the charts at about 38, something like that. And it was a disappointment. But that week was the Miami Music Conference. And Sing It Back, the Boris version, was the biggest record. Everybody was calling into Radio 1. This is, you know, Boris DeLugosh version. So at that point, I rang up the label guy and I was at night at his house because I was listening to the radio and this was all coming in. I was like, are you listening to Pete Tong? Yeah. Right, okay, do me a favour, will you? Go into the office on Monday now and delete that and we'll go again, won't we? Yes, Roisin. Okay. So, you know. So it really was my vision, even though it was a remix. It was super my vision. Came from my soul that I wanted to do this. Came from my soul that I knew this version was a hit and everything else. But having said that, it was hard to feel full ownership of that success with it being a remix.
So lockdowns obviously changed everything as we know it.
Yeah.
I love the rave that you took part in for Homo Block, sort of bringing clubbing to the screen. Now, dance music is obviously functional and its root is in creating a moment. So how have you adapted this year?
Well, I'm going to be really honest, but one upside is that I haven't had to do loads of festivals this year because I have been doing them year in, year out for quite a long time. Since I put out Hairless Toys, which was my first album after I had babies and stuff, it's been every year. So that's 4 years, really, of going and doing festivals. So in a way, that's quite nice. And I'm here in Ibiza now, spending a good solid 3 weeks really just decanting myself and rebuilding myself.
Has having children changed your sort of desire to go out as well, aside from performing and work?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it has. But also, the state of clubbing has changed my desire to go out, really. It's not my cup of tea to stand around looking at a DJ with a phone in my hand.
Yeah.
Totally. And festivals are great too, but you wouldn't want to be doing them every year, you know, of your life. Mm. And you could, because there are just so many of them. And there's been such a huge desire for it. For people, and that's all very well, but if you go into one after another, after another, after another, it's quite nice to have the break this summer. And yes, I did those performances. I did those performances on lockdown, and they were a joy to do. Very simple thing to do, just singing live, I got my lighting guy to bring the visuals that we use live, which are all my visuals, all my content, stuff that I make, basically, bits and pieces out of videos that I direct and what have you. And threw all that into the green light in the living room. So the living room could kind of turn into a cartoon or go back to being the living room and all that. And got a chance to dress up. You know, it was the only time I put slap on and the heels and that. The house was a tip. You know, pulling all these dresses out from under the eaves of the roof and out from under beds and things that had been put away for years. I pulled out, you know, flouncing around all over the place in the house. And it's a different kind of thing where on stage you don't really get to see the full facial expression of a performance. So it's more like a kind of film performance, like where you see an actor and you see expression in the face, you know, and in the eyes and things like that. So that was quite nice to do. There's a certain intimacy that you get with those kind of performances that you don't even get in the real, you know. So a whole different ball game, but very enjoyable. Yes, I must say it did make my lockdown quite interesting. And the fact that I'd gotten onto a music software the year before I'd started using Ableton meant that I could do lots of writing. So I'm more or less ready with the next album too. Nice. Because of lockdown.
So back to going out. What's your tipple? What keeps you going?
I smoke a lot of weed.
Do you?
Yeah. But I've given up now. I gave up 3 weeks ago. But yeah.
Right. Even when you're going out, does it not just chill you out?
Even when I'm doing anything. Honestly, I'm a Rastafari. I really am.
Right.
It helps me hear music. It's just part, it's how I grew up, you know. It's really part of how I grew up with music. It's very associative.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you ever found love on the dance floor?
Yeah, I mean, I found everything on the dance floor, absolutely everything. I found Maloko, I found my career on the dance floor. I was in a little dirty little scruffy underground party in a basement when I met Bryden. And it's a true story. I sidled up to him and said, do you like my tight sweater? And he did, and he wanted to record me saying it. And we went to his huge studio. He'd built a studio called Fon Studio, a very famous place in Sheffield. I had no idea. I just thought he was fit. Anyway, he brought me to this place in the middle of the night and recorded me saying that. And from there, we started a relationship and continued. Every now and again, we'd be at a party and something would come out of me gob and we'd go in the middle of the night and record it, not singing or anything. And somehow that led to us signing a 6-album deal.
Wow.
Which I remember saying to him, are you sure you want to do this? Like, you're a real producer. And I think he just kind of wanted to be with me because we were just so in love. And it was very enjoyable, very fun to kind of go into the studio and pretend to be a valley girl and go, I'm pretty weirdo. And, you know, it was just very freeing for both of us. And he said to me, don't worry about the 6 albums. He was 13 years older than me. So, and he'd really had a lot of experience in the music business already. He said, don't worry about 6 albums. He said, if you manage to make 6 albums, Roisin, something's went very, very right. So
right.
You won't have to worry about that.
And going back to the functional nature of dance music, you've just released Roisin Machine. Yes. Banger of an album.
Mm.
So how has releasing an album during the year when we can't go to nightclubs been different?
Oh, well, I hope
in terms of how you wrote it.
I think the singles, you know, they do work on the dance floor and the affiliated amazing remixes that the Parrot does, and then all the incredible people who are doing currently mixes of the current single and have done mixes of the other singles. They all work in the clubs, and it's, you know, would have been great. I would have been in every kind of conceivable club this week, this summer, that's for sure, because right. all of the different mixes and everything. But the album itself is not really... It's for home listening, you know, and in a way it is like a sort of padlock or whatever, kind of like where a dub album. It's almost like there was a proper album somewhere and then we took it and dubbed it. That's kind of the mentality of the of this album. And we've created a world, you know, with these songs that stands alone and has a point of difference to the singles. People are, I've told people, it's known that it's a seamless mix, but you can listen to the tracks. Obviously you can skip between the tracks and the beginnings and ends make sense. So it's not like you can't not listen to it all in one go or anything. It would be good if you did.
If you could go to a club from the past, what would it be?
It would be Paradise Garage.
Yeah, why?
With Larry playing, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Just for the music and the.
Yeah.
Ambiance and the...
The fact that it had probably the greatest system ever built as well.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, yeah. They tinkered with it constantly. He did, you know. He was in there in the week playing with the system, making the system great. Yeah, right, no, it's well known to be, like, the most immensely amazing. They can't build them like that anymore. They just can't.
Right. I wonder what it is now. It's probably some multi-million dollar apartment.
It's an apartment block, yeah. That's what it is.
That's sad, isn't it? That's fucking sad. How do you end the night? What's your favourite way to end the night?
End what kind of night? It depends.
Well, I mean, I visualise you in a kebab shop, like the Overpowered video.
Yeah, that can happen. That definitely does happen. You do get a bit peckish, don't you, after a good long dance?
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, you went, it's used to be sort of an all back to mind thing, didn't it?
Have you ever been to a house party, like, totally uninvited and, like, blagged your way in or got in trouble or anything? Got any funny?
Oh, God, yeah. I think I spent about 15 years just blagging my way into places. But that would have been, that wouldn't have been my formative years. My formative years in Sheffield were dancing really in a family, really in a family, in a tribe that were very deeply connected. And
your chosen family.
Yeah, and they really were like making their own parties. The best DJs still to this day in my life are Winston Hazel and Pipes and Parrot, the guys that put on the parties in Sheffield. 9 times out of 10 there'd be free parties, they'd be under a restaurant in a cellar, or they'd be in somebody's loft, or you know, and they were the best parties of all. And that was an education as much as anything else. And a real story about not just fun, but meaning and purpose and going somewhere with your life and music being the thing that carried you there. Very special time.
Do you remember Caligula, that party in East London?
Yeah, yeah.
Jim and Leo's.
Yeah. I remember going in there one time and saying, "Where's Leo?" And they said, "Oh, he's in the back there." And there was a bed in the back and he was like whipping people in the bed. Oh, he actually...
Because that was in...
Wasn't
that? That was like a little restaurant or something.
Wasn't it in an old toilet or bath or something?
An old bathhouse, wasn't it? It was behind Liverpool Street Station. I guess it was about 10 years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
A decade ago.
Yeah, but that's well past my formative years as well, you know, well past the scruffy, real formative year. But I really did enjoy it. Yeah, I miss Leo that he's gone. I really do. He's gone to live in Leo is in Rio.
Brazil.
Yeah,
Leo's in Rio. And where do you, what sort of cities or places do you love to go out in? Because I've never been to South America, but I imagine... Rio's got some amazing
It's pretty good. pretty good. I like Serbia. You know, that's really amazing. Why? And Poland and like those kinds of places where, I mean, it's less so now. Also amazing in Tbilisi to rave. Yeah. Just because those kind of places, especially maybe 10 years ago, you know, when they were just building something, you know, your kids were just building scenes. And to me, that's where it's always been more exciting than when everything's already established, done, people are making, know how to make money and all that sort of stuff. It's more of a pop-up scene, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, as a reaction to being held back in life as well, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There's this kid I follow. Yeah, I follow this kid on Instagram. He lives in Moscow, which is, of course, you know, Russia's not known as being the most open-minded place.
No.
But he does this party, and it's this mega gay party that looks fabulous. Full of queens and characters.
Because it's a real safe space then, and so can really let go, whereas you can't, as soon as you step back outside the door, you've got to pull it all back in again.
Totally.
I think also where people are politically engaged or part of some sort of political movement, even if they want to be or not. So in those places in Middle Europe and Eastern Europe at that time, it's in the air. The politics is in the air as well. And I think that really sounds like that would ruin having fun, but actually it makes fun even more fun somehow. Yeah. To feel you're on the vanguard of something really going somewhere. And also Istanbul. I've had some incredible nights in Istanbul, like where you're on top of a building partying, like best music you've ever heard. The swimming pools, all these gorgeous people. And then you hear the prayer. The guy goes up on another building and he starts. So you've got your techno music and you're going, it's mixing with it, you know.
That's
these
amazing.
Clashes. And I love cities with big rivers running through them. I mean, like those cities, the huge river, like in Istanbul, obviously one side of the river is Asia and one side of the river is Europe. So you can imagine that is like, poof, this insane, you know, and then they've got incredible artists there and it's a very amazing history and all that. And then there's all this oppression as well. It's a mad place, mad. And Tbilisi.
And you think that helps like...
off the scale, you know, I was in a rave. We were invited to Tbilisi by the government that was in about 10 years ago. And they were real like libertarian sort of pushing things through government, you know, Friends of America and all that, really pissed off the Russians constantly. And we were invited by them. I played their Independence Day and we stayed there 4 nights and we were hanging around with the government. And, you know, I was in the rave.
Where is it?
Georgia.
Am I being completely...
Georgia.
Oh, right. Geography is not my strong
point. No, mine neither. And I honestly haven't a clue, but I do know this place because it really stayed with me. And I was raving on the dance floor and, you know, you turn around, there's the mayor raving with you with his shirt off, like with a bottle of wine, red wine, swigging red wine out of the bottle on the dance floor. That was just... genius. They had
amazing,
a big party.
Amazing.
They had a big party in the summer house of the president of the, you know, the, not president, but the, you know, the, like the prime minister. And it was in a kind of beautiful place in the country, but sort of a compound where lots of political class have houses and that. And all the communist guys were trying to shut down, they were calling the police and trying to shut down his party and all this, you know, and this is the government. Like, it was genius. Genius.
Amazing.
But you saw what happened there, the big rave. They went into the square a couple of years ago, because they were trying to shut down the clubs. And they raved for like 5 days nonstop out in front of the government building in the square there, where we played
In protest.
Yeah. And it was like genius, genius place. It's a genius place.
I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions. I ask everyone these on this podcast. Okay, you're throwing a party, you're a club. Who's on your dream guest list? Let's say three names, living or dead?
Well, I would have Larry Levan come to do the DJ.
Yeah.
And then I would quite like to have perhaps a Marianne Faithfull, perhaps there. Could have.
Good one.
But you'll mind you, she'd probably be telling everybody, you know, how to do it. I mean, she's a bit bossy, isn't she? Let's have Grace Jones for sure. We have Grace 100%. Jones in there, sort of. She could do some riding of the bar and let me off for one
night. Yeah, she'd have a hula hoop on or something.
Yes.
You know, love Grace.
And then, I'd like to have Mickey Murphy, my father, when he was young. Jesus, nobody raved like him. He was great. And then, obviously, afterwards, he could do a bit of a sing song. Which would be nice. Yeah. Once the beats were turned down, my dad could start doing a few old songs, and that'd be grand. It's a bit of a hard question, that, between people.
Is it?
Yeah, because actually, it'd be my mates, wouldn't it? The best people to have with you are your mates.
And so you've got Larry Levan, you've booked Larry to DJ.
Oh, for
what's
sure.
What's the final track?
Not going to tell him what to play, but I think something more will go down as a final track pretty well.
Yeah, nice. Nice.
For me, something more, the version that we decided to go with for the single, it really makes me think of the end of the night. It's an end of the night song. And I would love to hear it in that context.
Yeah, played by him.
Yeah, on that system, the Paradise Garage. Come on, let's have it.
Amazing. Brushy Murphy, this is your life of the party.
Oh, lovely stuff. Thank you so much.
This has been Life of the Party with me, Jody Harsh. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't subscribed just yet, please do. There's a new episode every week. Right, see you at the next party.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.